Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Got no reason for the things I fear, the things that plague me when I see and hear. Dime's a nickel and a nickel's none. I'll throw myself into the Sunday sun. A summer Sunday when you went insane. You said you're going, but I said I came. I'm throwing oranges in an apple cart. The ties that bind are tearing me apart. Jenny says, turn off the radio. Jenny says, turn off the light.
Gentlemen, this is House Bill 945. Create a counterintelligence, counterterrorism team. For the state of Florida, we are very, very aware of the questions regarding First Amendment, questions regarding any sort of political risks of speech. We're going to address that in an amendment that comes to the next committee because this is a budget committee and we can't present those policy kind of talks.
Don't worry about that First Amendment stuff. You know, we'll protect people come a little bit later. Just trust us. You know, when we get to the next committee, the third committee, everything will be fine. This is House Bill 945. Danny Alvarez is the person here there talking. And, you know, if you have a normal citizen's awareness of the things going on in Tallahassee, you have no idea that this is going on. You have never heard of this bill. It's, you know, what? It's hard to track a lot of these things. You know, we got this property tax thing. We got the zoning thing. I don't know. They're trying to make it harder for people to vote. They're trying to name a whole highway after President Trump, and they're making Charlie Kirk Day, and it's hard to keep up with all this stuff. I understand. That's my job, is to keep up with this stuff as much as possible. So here goes. Counterterrorism and counterintelligence bill. Danny Alvarez, Representative Alvarez, explaining that this bill is designed to help us create a kind of law enforcement capability that goes beyond individual PDs and county sheriffs and, you know, people who represent a threat to the state. If the FBI and the CIA, or, well, I guess not the CIA, but the FBI or, you know, whoever, DHS, isn't necessarily doing what they need to be doing, we need to be doing what we need to do because we are a big state with a lot of concerns and a lot of threats.
Just understand, this is going after terrorists, nation-state bad actors, not political speech. A criminal predicate is required prior to any law enforcement activity. We don't have intelligence authorities. We're in law enforcement, and that's how this begins. So, ladies and gentlemen, there must be a crime that someone they believe is accused of or they have committed before they can investigate. Sir, that is a bill.
So it's not just about political speech, because when you start talking about, you know, surveillance and intelligence and, I don't know, maybe they're not so secret, these police, but, you know, when you start sort of hinting in this direction, you kind of have concerns about how it might get used. And, you know, Toby Overdorff, Republican, asks the question, well, how do you make sure this doesn't get used for political enemies? Because there's a passage in the bill that is, a little bit concerning.
How do we ensure that the information that's gleaned from the various investigations is not used for, say, political gain or things like that?
You're agnostic.
It's a really, really good question. I think there's a major misconception about what counterintelligence is and counterterror. What we're looking for and we're looking at is, remember, first, the initial criminal predicate has to begin and has to be there. Are you working against our infrastructure, our electrical? Are you trying to bring in a fungus into our water supply? These are the specific things like that that they're working at, drug cartels, terrorist organizations. This political speech and political activity is covered on the Constitution, and the same framework that holds today investigations against political speech and political framework exists as that, and those guardrails are literally what we would count on for our police.
So he says there has to be a crime, and also there are already guardrails to protect people's privacy and their rights from being surveilled over their political speech, their protest participation, whatever, okay? But Toby Overdorff is not inventing this concern. If you read the bill, lines 38 to 46, you ready, John? You're gonna have to play citizen here and just tell me what you think when you hear this.
Okay.
As used in this section, the term adversary intelligence entity includes but is not limited to any national, foreign, multinational, friendly, competitor, opponent, adversary, or recognized enemy government or non-governmental organization, company, business, corporation, consortium, group, agency, cell, terrorist, insurgent, guerrilla entity, or person whose demonstrated actions, views, or opinions are a threat or are inimical to the interests of this state and the United States of America. I mean, I was with you with, you know, terror cell and guerrilla and insurgent.
But not all the rest of it.
Whose demonstrated actions, views, or opinions are a threat or are inimical to the interests of this state.
And who makes that call?
That sounds like anybody who disagrees with the government.
Exactly.
Am I wrong? Am I reading this wrong?
You are 100% correct.
It sounds like this counterintelligence, counterterrorism bill would allow you to surveil people on the basis of having political views contrary to the government, which seems pretty broad. And it also has includes, but is not limited to. It could be anybody. Because if it's not limited to these, I mean, this is just some examples of stuff that we could do. And, okay, so who is against the bill? Bobby Book with the First Amendment Foundation.
History shows when government is given broad intelligence authority and is simply told to exercise restraint or follow the rules, the limits expand, quietly at first and then irreversibly. I'm not asking you to assume bad intentions, but I am asking you to read the words on the page and ask a simple question. Where are the lines this unit cannot cross? If you cannot point to those limits in the law itself, you are not voting for policy, you are voting for discretion. And history tells that discretion without guardrails is where abuse comes.
There's a lot of permissions, there's not a lot of restrictions and limitations. And if you don't put them in there, then you're trusting, essentially, to give all this power to people and hope they use it well. What he says, voting for discretion, not voting for policy. Abdullah Skier from the ACLU of Florida. And by the way, I know a lot of people think that the ACLU is just a pure left-wing organization. No, the ACLU actually protects a lot of rights that you care about, religious rights, free speech rights, right of privacy. They certainly, you know, do a lot of protecting of things on the left, but, you know, they're generally really serious about, you know, First Amendment rights. So don't write him off just because he's an ACLU guy. I know where the ACLU is politically, but don't ignore it just because of that.
Time and again, laws passed in the name of public safety have been used to justify discretionary enforcement and investigations that undermine our civil liberties. We have grave concerns that the current provisions of HB 945 could easily be used to silence dissenting voices under the guise of security. Florida has the tools to prosecute actual criminal conduct, including violent crimes. The vague and overbroad language in this bill could easily be weaponized against everyday Floridians engaged in First Amendment-protected activity. This would subject them to unjustified surveillance and investigation without basic due process, clear standards, or independent oversight.
So far, it's people who, you know, might run the risk of having a leftist kind of label assigned to them, the First Amendment Foundation and the ACLU. But this is a voice you might recognize, Alex Andrade.
Hey, Representative Alvarez, I believe your intent, and I know that you're going to work through this, but the FDLE answers to not just the governor, but the full cabinet. And I have concerns about abuses of this language, understanding that most everything that this bill would permit a law enforcement agency to do would largely already be permitted with the proper documentations and warrants.
So what is valuable in the bill seems to be already allowed. What is novel in the bill seems to run the risk of trusting the discretion, judgment, and good character of the members of the Florida cabinet to whom FDLE would report. Who's in the cabinet? Well, the governor, the lieutenant governor, the secretary of agriculture, and what's the other one? The attorney general! Meaning that at some point you're trusting in the goodwill, motives, ethics, character, and restraint of James Othmeyer, among other people.
Seen sufficient abuses of power amongst at least one unelected cabinet member to give me a grave concern about the abuse of a bill like this. And if going into statute, I have to oppose it today. But if it makes it to state affairs and is cleaned up to prevent those possibilities. Look forward to supporting on the floor.
So he's being nice. He's saying if you clean it up and you take care of this stuff and you maybe tweak it a little bit, I could possibly vote for it on the floor because you said there's a big amendment coming and you're not really offering it now. But, you know, again, it doesn't say specifically that A.G. Uthmeyer has all the authority in the world, but he is the only elected official. That's the only unelected member of the cabinet they're talking. Well, I guess CFO would be also unelected because he's been appointed, you know, so that's two. You know, CFO has been on this, you know, weird binge about everybody's misspending all their money in this weird report that was written by basically AI, or looks to me, and then ends up saying that cities are bad. That doesn't indicate any particular character flaw with Blazing Golia. But we know that James Uthmeyer's office actually set out to create a fake protest at the last committee meeting that the, you know, healthcare budget subcommittee that Alex Andrade chairs was having on Monday, where they went out and actively rallied the pro-life people to lie to them about what Alex was doing in the budget, and told them, you know, show up and make signs. And I don't think I actually told you about the signs. Did I tell you about the signs? I told you that they gave them sign suggestion, but I didn't tell you what they were, right? Oh, No, I don't think I did.
Here, let's refresh our memory.
I wasn't prepared to read all of these right now. Here, let me play another clip just as a close here, and then I'll find the actual signs because they're funny.
History shows that when we depend on the federal government, Florida loses. When we depend on the federal government, New York loses. After 9/11, New York woke up. At that time, they were bigger than us. They actually formed their own CI team. It has over 300 members. It's located in 17 different countries. And since 9/11, they believe they've stopped 72 different terroristic activities against the state of New York. We're Florida. We are larger than them. We have more people coming here on a regular basis. And I'm not sure whenever we gave up our ability to defend ourselves in spite of what the federal government promises that they can do.
Now, on the one hand, that sounds like really important. They stopped a bunch of terrorist attacks. Okay, that sounds important. On the other hand, it also sounds like an agency that was started with a pretty small nature has now expanded to 300 agents in 17 countries. Government grows. And, you know, if you think they're doing good work, they're doing good work to protect the interests of New York and the United States outside this country in all kinds of ways. And if you think that they're, you know, expanding the surveillance state, then, you know, they're doing it all across New York and all across these countries, and they're doing some, you know, pretty concerning stuff. Now, their language, I haven't read the New York bill, so I don't know if their language compares to ours. But again, the concern about this bill is the breadth of the language about who could be considered an adversary and who you could target for surveillance, which, again, under a sort of, you know, push up against the limits kind of view, people who try to abuse their authority, it does seem to include people who are politically contrary to whatever the state of Florida stands for and whatever that means. You know, does that mean that a socialist or a communist could get surveilled because they're a socialist or a communist? Does that mean that an atheist could get surveilled because, you know, we're a religious state, mostly, largely, somewhat? Or, you know, does that mean that if you, I don't know, you know, if you criticize the government and you think that they are overreaching, or, I don't know, maybe you call for an investigation against the $10 million transfer of a bunch of money that was supposed to be paid back to, you know, the Agency for Healthcare Administration. It winds up running a political PAC doing political ads by James Uthmeyer. I mean, like, you know, where exactly would these limits be? Because, again, if you're going to, and what Alex is concerned about, and this is always the right concern, would you vote this power for somebody who was your political enemy and somebody who politically disagrees with you? It's very easy to vote in power when you're a three-quarter supermajority in the state and, you know, you hold the governor's office and have held it for a while and you trust that it's always going to be your people that have the power. But even then, you know, maybe some of your people aren't the best. But you always have to worry, you know, what happens if my enemies get this? What happens if just people who disagree with me get this? You know, would I vote for this if I were the minority party and the other party was the one that was going to get the power right away? That's always the question you have to ask yourself. Okay, so you say, well, you know, how bad was this thing about this protest? Well, the note that went out, I believe it was an email, could have been text, but this went out to, like, the pro-life organizations to try to get them worked up to show up to Alex Andrade's subcommittee to protest. Tomorrow at 4 p.m., Rep. Andrade's subcommittee is scheduled to meet for the last time with almost 3 weeks left in session. There's more than enough time to tackle big issues and fund the FPCN, that's the Pregnancy Crisis Network. That's what they were saying, lying, saying it was defunded. It was not defunded. Again, just because FPCN is named in the statute does not mean it automatically receives annual funding. Here we go. For anyone who is willing and able to attend the meeting tomorrow, the Attorney General would love to host them in his office at 3:30 for a time of prayer before the meeting. Please have them RSVP to me directly where and when. Sign ideas. Stop working for Planned Parenthood, Andrade, because his law firm that he is not a partner at, which they also said he's going to make money off of this. He's not a partner at the law firm that represents Planned Parenthood in their case against the state. Mr. Speaker, speak out, all caps, against Andrade's support for Planned Parenthood. Alex is, I think Alex has a 100% pro-life rating. And if he doesn't, it's a mistake. Okay. Healthcare policy can't support Planned Parenthood. Stop profiting off of Planned Parenthood. I mean, you guys should have used better AI. Jay Williams is, I guess, the one who put out these things. And he is, he started work for James Uthmeyer. He's been working where is it at? Actually, Rick Outson did a pretty good piece on this on his blog. Jeremy Redfern is like the deputy communications guy. I forget what Jay Williams is, the one who's been most tied up in this. And they denied all of this stuff when asked. And then somebody kind of inadvertently confirmed it. And we actually have the email or whatever. And it came out in like the Miami Herald and Florida Politics and whatever. So that guy, you want to give him power to surveil people that he views as having political views that are contrary or hostile or inimical. That's a great word for hostile to the state. I don't know. So they had the vote and it passed. And Alex was the only Republican to vote no, to which I say, well done. I would have voted no, too. And we'll see if it even gets heard in committee. There's no companion in the Senate yet, which is often the case. So or it hasn't been taken up. I'm not sure which it is. But anyway, so the things that are going on in Tallahassee that maybe you want to worry about that are interesting. 526 here on News Radio 92.3. If you have a home improvement project that you're working on or need to work on or you've been putting off working on, Honeydew, not yet. Big game's on. nobody's ever had that conversation. Or you build things for a living. Pensacola Hardware, they're just really good at providing you the stuff. Okay, they'll have it in stock. You don't have to special order it. Unless it is a special order. Like if it's something that's created special for your project that, you know, the engineer or the, you know, the whatever, the specified product that you need to build that house or that building. Okay, I mean, sure, it's a one-up. But otherwise, they have it. They're not going to have to order it. They have it in stock. If they don't have it, you don't need it. They've been doing this for a long time, you know, not 10 years, not 20 years, not 70 years, not 100 years, 175 years, basically before every other company. I mean, they're one of the 50 oldest companies in the entire U.S. Before there was Levi's, before there was a Civil War, they have been helping people build, rebuild, and remodel Pensacola safely, efficiently, effectively, and cost-effectively. Stop in and talk to them today right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-444-2013. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-444-2013. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-444-2013. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-444-2013 or biglou.com.
Investing in times like these can be scary. If you don't have the right person at the helm of your finances, Armada Advisors will put you on the right path to success. Coming up at 9 a.m. after the Pensacola Morning News, be sure to join Wesley Odom with Armada Advisors to find a better way for you to successfully invest your money and enjoy your retirement. That's Monday at 9 after Pensacola Morning News on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Don't you hate it when you wake up and feel like you already missed something important? The Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay, weekdays 5 to 9, News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable. I call sandwiches Sammy's, Sandoozles, or Adam Sandler's. Fried chicken is fry fry chicky chick. Chicken parm is chicky chicky parm parm. Chicken cacciatore, chicky catch.
Hey, baby, jump over here when you do the ooby dooby.
You can't just make up words and then sing them in a song. You can if you're CCR. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, good morning. The U.S. and Iran meeting for another round of nuclear talks in Geneva today. This comes as the president has continued to warn Iran about possible military action if they do not reach a deal. Services begin today to pay tribute to the late Reverend Jesse Jackson. He'll be lying in repose at the Rainbow Push Coalition headquarters in Chicago both today and tomorrow. His body will then be transported to South Carolina and Washington, D.C.
I always feel like that term, in repose, is kind of a funny one.
It's a little strange.
It makes it sound like he's got, you know, the Roman toga on, getting fed the grapes, getting the palm fronds waved over his head. Propped up on like one elbow, looking languidly at the peasants or subjects before it. that's the picture I get when I hear that term. Am I the only one?
No, I see it. Yeah.
Fox News. I'm CJ Papa. The U.S. and Iran are chatting, but not face to face, for a third time in Geneva about curbing Iran's nuclear ambition. Vice President J.D. Vance.
The principle is very simple. Iran cannot have a nuclear weapon. If they try to rebuild the nuclear weapon, that causes problems for us.
Those indirect talks brokered by Amman's foreign minister. It's not clear if the U.S. will actually engage Iran face to face. The notes are passed by intermediaries. Now, many see this as a last-ditch effort to prevent a war between the United States and Iran.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will answer questions today. Her husband, the former President Bill Clinton, tomorrow from the House Oversight Committee on five topics concerning the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. The power couple, not accused of any wrongdoing. The meeting behind closed doors in suburban New York. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. It's a nice warm start to our day. We've got 64 degrees right now. We'll get to our full forecast. That's up in just a few minutes. A University of West Florida trustee has cleared a key hurdle in Tallahassee. Adam Kissel was recommended for confirmation Tuesday by the Senate Appropriations Committee on Higher Education. Kissel was previously rejected by the full Senate last spring, but then reappointed by Governor DeSantis in June. Four other UWF trustees and four Pensacola State College appointees were also approved by the committee. A fatal house fire was reported in Pensacola. Escambia County Fire Rescue responded to a home on the 800 block of Merlin Terrace at about 8:30 last night. The county confirmed at least one person is dead as a result of that fire. The cause is not known at this time. Also, a fire in Warrington Wednesday evening. That happened around 6:45 on Lakewood Road. Escambia Fire Rescue responded to that fire as well. All four residents and pets were able to make it out safely. No injuries were reported at that property. The cause of that fire also is still under investigation. Well, the popular burger chain Cookout might be headed to Santa Rosa County. Property records show the North Carolina-based restaurant has now purchased the former Ollie's Neighborhood Grill on Highway 90 in Milton. That sale was made earlier this month. The sale price was $1.25 million. Cookout declined to comment on the purchase. The chain already has a location in Pensacola on Nine Mile Road. No opening date has been announced. Pensacola State College has brought in a second law firm to help fight a federal lawsuit. The WSRE-TV Foundation sued the college after trustees voted to end the station's affiliation with PBS. The foundation says the college is trying to seize control of its donations and violate First Amendment rights. The college's legal response is due by the end of the month. WSRE has served the Gulf Coast region since 1967 and reaches more than 1.5 million viewers. Florida could soon ban the sale of nitrous oxide at vape shops and convenience stores. The Senate Fiscal Policy Committee unanimously passed a bill this week making possession and sale of nitrous oxide a third-degree felony. Senator Clay Yarborough said Small and large format canisters are increasingly marketed with bright packaging and being sold at vape shops. The bill is named Meg's Law after a Central Florida woman whose family said she was addicted to nitrous oxide and died behind a smoke shop. A 2025 study showed nitrous oxide deaths increased 600% from 2010 to 2023. The measure now heads to the Senate floor. Residents in the Barth and Molino areas have a chance to get rid of old furniture, appliances, and other junk for free next week. Escambia County holding a neighborhood cleanup, in that area Wednesday, March 4th. Items need to be by the curb by 7 a.m. that day. The cleanup includes electronics, mattresses, tires, and even hazardous waste like paint and batteries. It's 5:34. Let's get a look at our forecast with Brooke Richardson from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We will be dealing with about a 30% chance of some stray showers today. High near 74 degrees, partly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 64. For Friday, 70% chance of rain, high near 72 degrees. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 55. Looking at some sunshine on Saturday, high near 75 degrees. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 57. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke, and 63 degrees right now. Our next news at 6, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. NVIDIA's earnings are top of mind on Wall Street. The world's most valuable company reported better-than-expected fiscal fourth-quarter results, clocking 75% revenue growth in its core data center business. The stock rose 1.4% upon the news. CEO Jensen Huang said demand for computing is off the charts as AI technology advances rapidly. Discord, the popular platform for gamers to communicate online, is postponing its controversial age verification policy after receiving swift backlash from users with concerns about their privacy. Company leadership says the global rollout of the system is now delayed to the second half of this year. Alphabet is bringing its robotic software company into Google. Intrinsic operated under Alphabet's Other Bets after graduating from its Moonshot factory. Intrinsic CEO Wendy Tan White said it will work closely with Google DeepMind. Futures are slightly lower. Yesterday, the Dow gained 307. That's your money now.
You know those big banks where you're just an account number? Where customer service is a chatbot and hold music is your least favorite song? Yeah, we're not that. We're Penair Credit Union. Local, member-owned, and actually built to work for you. With better rates, few, if any, fees, and service from people who know you by name. So why bank big when you can bank better? Visit penair.org to learn more. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hobbies can be fun and expensive. How about a hobby that's fun and could make you money? Find out this morning at 10 with Emerald Coast Coins. Hear about precious metals and metal detectors as a great hobby. For nearly 20 years, Emerald Coast Coins has been one of the top-rated businesses in Northwest Florida to buy and sell gold, silver, and the best metal detectors to find treasure. Get more information this morning on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. The Pensacola Runners Association presents the Bay to Breakfast Trail Run Saturday morning. Enjoy the beauty and challenge of an 8K trail run and breakfast after the run. See runsignup.com. Friday through Sunday, check out the Pensacola Dog Fanciers annual dog show at the Escambia County Equestrian Center. Enjoy the show, displays, and the health clinic. See PensacolaDogs.org for more. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Ever notice how the best advice usually comes from someone who actually does this stuff for a living? That's the idea behind Pet Talk, also known as the Pensacola Expert Panel, weekdays at 9.
Good morning, this is Pet Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg.
Meg sits down with local business owners and professionals to talk real solutions, real experience, and real life questions. Pet Talk with Meg, weekdays 9 to 11 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, informative, local, dependable.
Burn. Burn. Yeah.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us now by phone, we have Mayor D.C. Reeves, the mayor of Pensacola. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the show, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. I'm going to start with the oldest piece first because we just have never talked about this, you and I, on the air. And if I don't, we never will. I know it's going back a little bit in time, but I want to ask the question. The rebranding logo. I have said I like it, but I have also said that one of the things I really admired about you for the first 3 years of your administration was that you didn't do what Ashton or Grover did, which was try to put your special moniker, logo, slogan, brand on the city. And I'd have to rescind my complimenting you on not trying to do this. And all of a sudden, here we have a one. So that's part one, is doing it at all. Part two is, why not some kind of public input like you did with the street sweepers? Why not? Why money to some, you know, company? Why not something that's a little bit more public engagement, you know, public looking? Those are the questions I think people are asking. So your answers.
Sure. Well, first, I appreciate the 2 years and 11 months of support before we got here.
It was strong support. You know, I thought it was good.
It lasted. Yeah, there's a couple of things. And when we say, well, you know, that we put our own or the mayor puts their own moniker on, I mean, let me be clear. You know, my face isn't in any of the logos. What this really is this is a modernization of not only look, we've had the same logo for, so you talk about, well, there's been these different deviations. Yeah, there has been different terms used, but the same, 20-year-old, 25-year-old logo of the horizontal Pensacola logo, that isn't as translatable to today in the uses that we want to use it on, nor does anybody really understand what it is, that was really the refresh. So, and then a couple of things to that, you know, the biggest misnomer that I hear out there is, oh, you pay $25,000 for a logo. No, anybody who's, you know, this is probably my sixth or seventh branding or rebranding in my life, you know, in previous lives, branding or rebranding, and understand how many things come with that. I mean, I believe the brand guideline book is about 35 pages. There's multiple logos, the port, the police, the airport, that have some tie to the original logo. So those all need to be changed. There's letterhead that needs to get done. There's different settings on several different things. And so that's not just for the city of Pensacola. That's for whether it's a private company, it's a restaurant, it's just a private business. That it's much, anybody who says, well, it's just for a logo, then it gives off the impression that they lack the understanding of what goes into something of this depth. So I believe the rebrand in 2010 or 12, whatever it was for 12, 13 years ago, I believe just the rebranding stuff was $82,000 13 years ago. So, I mean, I'm certainly appreciative of a local company cares enough about our community to be able to work with us and try to make it as budget friendly as possible, given the hundreds of hours that it takes to go and weave through all of that. So we really like it. The public engagement aspect of it is extremely difficult versus if we were doing a flag, we've actually talked about that, like a city flag, that's been a popular thing.
Okay.
Where it's one image that we're voting on again. And that goes back to the misnomer. The misnomer is, all we would need is to have the public create one logo. No, we need to have the public create a 35-page document, including color scheme, including all of these other deviations. And that's just not realistic to have as a quote-unquote public thing. But on these one-offs, on a sign, on a flag, things like that, again, we've done it. So there's no reason we wouldn't want to do that. But sometimes we can do contests publicly, and sometimes it's just not feasible to do.
All right, and, you know, again, I get the concept of trying to, you know, Facebook has a logo, Instagram has a logo, AT&T has a logo. This is the Pensacola logo, and it does show that character of easily recognizable across all these different color variations and meanings and agencies and all that kind of stuff. So I appreciate that. There's still a part of me that wishes we could have done, like, here's our two or three different ones and then let the public vote, as opposed to the public invent it all themselves. But I understand too. And, you know, you're going to spend $75,000, then you get more upset people because you made three instead of just one. I get all that as well. Let's talk about the visits you took to, what, you went to Washington, you went to L.A. and to Tallahassee. Is that right, in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, the late January floor. Yeah, Washington for U.S. Mayor's winter annual meeting, then L.A. for the leadership meeting for U.S. mayors and And then home for 26 hours for the Mardi Gras parade, and then back to Tallahassee for all of my meetings to pound the pavement for our stuff over there. So yeah, it's been a flurry of advocacy, but very good and generally productive, we feel like.
And anything particular out of, I mean, I know, you know, it's ridiculous in a couple of minutes to ask, but, you know, is there anything that people would take away as, oh, well, that's a pretty big either learning thing or exposure or advancement of a goal?
Yeah, I mean, a few different things. It was interesting. I was invited, part of going to L.A. would be invited to Google, to the Spruce Goose hangar where Howard Hughes built the Spruce Goose. Google has turned that into their L.A. office. And they actually did a half day, full day, kind of 4 or 5 hours workshop with mayors all over the country on just what's coming in AI. So that was a pretty cool thing to be invited to, and certainly learned a lot about what's on the forefront. But from an advocacy standpoint, certainly the ACW conversations that we've had, we had two different meetings during that time with EPA, including about a dozen EPA folks federally last week as a follow-up. So I'm very, very encouraged by that. And, and we've met with FDOT in Tallahassee. We've met with the governor's office in Tallahassee. We've been busy for a reason. And again, that's part of the urgency of what's going on in the city. When you got a lot of projects, you got a lot of things to advocate for. Or funding deltas to make up and things like that. So the more action you have in the pinball machine, the more you need to be out there making sure that everything's going the way that you want to. So it's a good problem to have that we need to be out there because we're staying busy.
Mr. Mayor, one of the things that I had wanted to ask you about is, it's a big subject. It's an ongoing, long-standing thing, but the American Creosote Works, I know you talked about it a little bit yesterday in your press conference. This is the L Street and Gimbel and Pine, that huge area in there that has been vacant and basically fenced off for forever. As I understand it, phase one is getting ready to begin, but even phase one is still a few million dollars short, and there's several phases past that before this can ever actually be a usable site. Tell me what I don't understand, or tell me what the time frame is here.
Pretty good synopsis. 18 acres, basically south of Main Street as you're going west towards Brancas, and then north, of course, of the Sanders Beach neighborhood.
Yeah.
So 18 acres has been labeled a Superfund site since 1982, 2 years before I was born. So I think we've waited long enough here in the community. But the key aspects are 2021, we get funded in the $35, $40 million range. Well, as everything else happens, it takes 5 years to get going. So there's an $8.6 million delta for phase one. And then
because
there's
costs went up.
Extraction to actually extract the creosote off of the site. And that's north of $60 million of phase two. And that is unfunded. So where are we today? Where we're today is, yes, unlike the city government, where we can't start on a warehouse on the port until all the money is procured and voted on. So federal government, I guess, doesn't have that same issue, or it's already in separate buckets, but they are going to start scraping some of the yards outside of the fence line which has always been step one of phase one. And that will actually start in this July. So work will begin. But here's the good news. What I can tell you is, and I mentioned it when you asked me about the advocacy trips, is that I've had several meetings with EPA. This is kind of the one that we've got clenched in our jaw right now, and we aren't going to let go. We've made that clear with them. And listen, we met with the Deputy Secretary of EPA on a previous Washington, D.C. trip, and he said, hey, the Trump administration is going to cut red tape. And this is with 30 mayors in the room. So they asked for questions. I raised my hand and said, well, I've got the project for you. We have one that's been super fun since 1982. So if you want to prove it, you can come prove it in Pensacola. And so we kind of built some momentum on that. So that comment led to about three meetings. And again, the last meeting I had with EPA, we had about 12 people federally on it, which is generally a good sign. And so there's some more things to work through, but I guess what I can say to you today is I feel extremely, extremely optimistic about the coming weeks on what may happen with EPA. That's what I can say right now.
Okay.
I think the advocacy has been very worthwhile, and as things get buttoned up and T's crossed, I's dotted, we'll We'll see what the good news is. But I feel like we're in a much, much better position as I'm on the phone with you today than we were 30 days ago.
So optimistically realistic, realistically optimistic, something like that about, you know,
right.
best within the range of what's actually possible is where we're at. Is that a fair way to say it?
That's a fair way to say it, and it's fair to say that this is directly on the EPA's radar, and
right.
I feel very confident saying that they are in the same advocacy motivation for this particular project that I am.
I know in your press conference, you keep getting asked about the hotel, obviously, and I appreciate your response that, well,
right.
look, they're not in code violation. It is private property. There's very limited things that we can do, you know, and they're being much better, even though we hate missing the hotel, they're at least being, you know, fairly decent civic partners, certainly compared to the owners of the property up on Palafox, the old medical facility. But I have a different question, and people have been asking me, and I don't know the answer. The old FPL building or the old Gulf Power building, which is, I think, vacant or mostly vacant, what's the future there? Is there, I've heard people say they might, you know, maybe Burdon would put their headquarters in there, whether that would take up the whole thing or not. That would also carry some parking with it. I don't know. What is the future of that building, if we know?
Yeah, the last update I received, again, and keep in mind, thank you for saying that, because there's always that misunderstanding when there's a big empty building in the city that the city somehow has authority
exactly.
over those things. You know, sometimes I wish that were the case. Sometimes I'm glad it isn't. But in this particular case, it is a private transaction between FPL. Last I heard, it is under contract with a private owner. I met with them with this group previous to it going under contract, just for familiarity's sake. I think they would be looking at multiple different opportunities there. I certainly wouldn't want to speak for them on what they think is the highest and best use of that building. But point is step one is positive, which is if there's somebody interested in activating the building, the last thing we want is an empty building on Bayfront. So if we can have commerce and office or whatever, retail, hotel, whatever they want to do, anything there being activated is a good thing. And secondly, I'm encouraged by this particular group, if they close, if this moves forward, that they are open to have conversations with the city about any opportunities that may be available. So that was, I would say, generally positive. But at this point, ultimately, the transaction is in the hands of FPL and its broker. And whether that gets closed on or signed off on or not, or whether it did yesterday or not, I'm not aware that it's fully closed. But I do know that it was moving.
Okay.
And Burdon is a good example, I think. I think that was a conversation that came up as a kind of a what if, is that the 500 off-port jobs that will come with Burdon, maybe that would be a good location for it.
You know, and I don't think we really have time to get into it, but there's a lot of little things that are going on that are really cool. We've reported on the Skill Bridges workshop for getting the veterans transitioned into work. But also, I love that Wings for All program that, and no, John, it's not Buffalo Wings for All. It's getting people who are neurodivergent and get stressed out by flying, putting them in an airplane on the tarmac to get accustomed to the idea of it so that then they would be able to fly or at least, you know, have that experience, even if it never produces a fly. I mean, it's little things like that that, it's sort of like the finishing touches on the trim in your house that just, they make all the difference for a city. And I love that program. So that's a wonderful thing. Just quickly, because we don't have time to really delve in, is the shutdown affecting anything for us, court, like at the port with TSA, with the airport? Are we still kind of doing okay on all these things or just generally?
Short answer is no change, no concern at this point. You know, it's always a moving target. Don't get mad at me if something changes in a week or 2 weeks out there. But no, as of this moment, we have checked specifically on those things. We should expect no changes. And I actually met with some of the TSA leadership when I was at the airport with Art Gateway and Delta yesterday. So I think we're good to go for now.
Very good. I always like to end with a lightning round. How exactly does DC Reeves prefer to open a door that you push on? You push on the wood or the glass? You push on the handle? You push with your feet? Are you a door kicker or door pusher? What's your preference?
I'm a classic. I'm just thinking about a push door with no handle on it. I'm just going to use my hand. I feel like that's why they put that little plate on it.
You're an obeyer then. You know, you do what they tell you to do.
Not germaphobe enough to must use my foot.
All right, very good.
Then it's going to hit me in the forehead. You know, so I'm going to just trust my hand to get the job done.
What is in your glove box in your car?
Key
items.
probably manuals, because you know, if I put something there, I'll forget it's in there. So that's, generally it's just whatever stuff came with the car.
Oh, okay. So no additions. Interesting. And last question. This is an important one. How many books, physical paper books, do you own in your house?
Oh, well, actually, in front of I'm looking at bookcases right now. I'm going to just take one. I'm going to say there's 12 on that shelf. I'm going to say 200.
Okay. All right.
Something like that.
All right. That's
Is there a certain like intelligence level? Is it 201?
I mean, John says he owns 12, and Andrew says he owns about 1,000. So you're right in the middle.
Well, I've got a couple empty shelves on top. If you've got any, you know, if you're doing a
well, John apparently likes to give away books, so maybe you guys can get together and arrange something a little bit later. Well, looking forward to the meeting.
I'll give him 5 books. You can give me a couple hundred.
My wife would love me for that, and love you for taking them. Very good, Mayor DC Reeves. Always a pleasure. So we look forward to the city council meeting tomorrow night. Thanks for the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
She's always trying to make me get rid of my books. But in her defense, it's because she's had to move them so many times, and she says,
Well, and that's the reason why I got rid of a lot of mine.
Sure it is.
Okay. No pictures either.
If you, John tries to, what about comic books? Literally. Anyway, jokingly, but yes, that was a question yesterday. Hey, if you've got a home that you're trying to buy or sell, often both, of course, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty sold 209 homes last year. That's 4 weeks on average. That's pretty good. The number one volume, you know, number of homes sold last year in this entire area, pretty successful at it. One of the things you might not think of using a realtor for is if you're buying a new home. You might think, well, I just got to talk to the builder. I just buy from the manufacturer. Okay, I mean, you can. Sure, of course. But here's the benefit of involving a realtor like Christina. She knows the market so well. She knows all the builders. She knows all of the deals, all the discounts, all the, you know, points buy downs, the, you know, closing cost buy downs, all that kind of stuff. And she can get you a smoking deal on that house because she knows how to negotiate with them. And then when you do take possession of it, she'll help you make sure that it gets done right. Because on the back end, a lot of times people take a home and there's, you know, you think there's 4 things for sure wrong with it, but there's 15 things where you're kind of like, I'm not sure if that's wrong. And then there's like another 20 that you don't even think of. And she'll be like, nope, 40 pieces of tape, this fix, all of that. And if there's something you think is wrong and it's not, she'll tell you that too. But the point is she'll help you get the best deal and then help you make sure and get the best house. 786-3996 for Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty.
Making the wrong choice can be very costly. Choosing the wrong plumbing company can cost you a lot of money. Hi, I'm Judy Lacey with Barbieri Plumbing, and we've been repairing Pensacola's plumbing problems for over 50 years. We are the local originator of the flat rate pricing system, so you don't have to pay by the hour, and there are no surprises. When you need a plumber, make the right choice and call Barbieri Plumbing. We will make your plumbing great again.
License number RF11067749.
Do you have questions regarding your plants and landscaping? If so, the Garden Line is for you. I am Mike Wiggins, and every Tuesday morning at 9, we are here for you on News Radio 92.3 to answer your questions. Seasonal changes call for different activities in your lawn and garden, so tune in and text or call with your questions on the Garden Line on Tuesdays at 9 and an encore each Saturday at the same time.
The Garden Line on the Pensacola Expert Panel, Tuesdays at 9 on News Radio 92.3.
News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 is accepting applications for employment. Periodically, we have openings in sales, business, news, promotions, engineering, production, and programming. We'll keep your application for consideration when such an opening occurs. We also provide internships for qualified students. Apply online at News Radio 92.3 or at our studios at 7251 Plantation Road between 8:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. ADX Communications is an equal opportunity employer.
You don't want rumors.
You want confirmation.
News Radio 92.3, 95.3 and AM 1620.
You want confirmation.
Informative, local, dependable.
Ugh, this is why I can't have nice things. Grr.
May or may not have had a different hairstyle when this came out. 8:58 on News Radio 92.3. David Wayne has got a headline or two for us. David?
Well, good morning, Andrew. 4 people are dead, 6 wounded after a gun battle off the coast of Cuba. Cuban officials say 10 men on board a Florida-registered speedboat were intercepted by Cuban Coast Guard in the island's territorial waters Wednesday, apparently trying to infiltrate Cuba for terrorist purposes.
Yeah, Cuba says, we'll see.
According to Cuba.
But they shot and killed 4 of them, right?
Yes, 4 people are dead.
Armed with rifles, armed with, you know, they had body gear on, and going to attack Cuba from Florida, although they were Cuban nationals, not U.S. citizens. But, yeah, Marco Rubio says, well, do keep in mind this is Cuba telling us this information, so.
Local news every hour.